today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, I was just going over your Rockin' the Suburbs timesheet, and I noticed that you put in for some time off.
Yeah, is that going to work out okay?
Sure. What do you have planned?
Well, I'm actually going to Cleveland. I'm going to sit by the Cuyahoga and stare at the factories.
Well, Cleveland does rock. Good. Okay, you brought a record today, right, Patrick?
I got a record, Jim. It's Paraboo's The Modern Dance.
The Modern Dance.
Yep.
This is the original issue, the original vinyl. Came out on Blank Records in 1978. Blank Records was a subsidiary of Mercury Records that was created just to put out this album.
I know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
we'll get
weird
to that in a little bit. But because originally you think, well, they're on a label called Blank Records. Like, that must have just been some really teeny little...
Yeah, or their own or something.
Right. Independent thing. But it's actually part of the major label syndicate. So, yeah. Funny thing. Okay. So, this week on Rock in the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We're doing some album anniversaries from 2018. Stuff that we are just now getting around to. We're sort of catching up from some records that had anniversaries earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And this Paraboo album, The Modern Dance, came out in January 1978, so 40 years ago this year. And probably an album that not a lot of people are familiar with.
Yeah.
So why do we think this is important?
Well, Jim, I think, you know, it certainly has, over time, proven to be one of those bands and one of those records, and this is probably one of the two or three important Paraboo records along with their early singles that really sort of defined a style before it even took place. Kind of in 1976, somehow Paraboo was already playing post-punk music,
right?
You know, that would really not blossom until the early 80s.
That's right. And I read actually that they, even at this time, we're saying we're making music for the 80s. Like, they were already thinking ahead, like we want to basically reset the clock and get to whatever that next decade is going to bring us, because it's probably going to be something really cool.
Yeah.
Sort of their idea, right?
Yeah. They had no idea what was actually going to happen when the 80s arrived. But you know, they were from Cleveland,
right?
Which was kind of a strange place to be when you think about it in the abstract. But of course, there was a very important Midwestern punk scene, you know, that actually took place in Cleveland and kind of the surrounding areas in Ohio, right? Akron, you would say, stretched to because of Devo, right?
That's right. But I think the Cleveland setting is really important.
Very important.
For how this band and a couple of others developed at that time. It wasn't the same kind of thing as Detroit. So as somebody, you know, who grew up between those two cities, Detroit always had a big music scene. Like, it was huge. I mean, lots of different styles of music, and obviously Motown being the biggest thing, but also, you know, had the punk scene that came on even before there was such a thing as punk with the MC5 and Iggy Pop and all of that. Right. So there were always like garage bands, punk bands, you know, and it sort of music just seemed to come through the cracks of the sidewalk in that city. You know what I mean? Cleveland, you don't think of in that same way, but what makes a band like Paraboo come out of Cleveland is, you know, people even today still joke about Cleveland, Ohio, and, you know, think of it as this kind of, I don't know, unworthy city in some way.
Yeah.
But what people don't realize is that back then in the late 70s, Cleveland was really down, like really down. It was like bankrupt and sort of falling apart and the lake was catching on fire and, you know, people were fleeing that city too. Their population declines were really steep. It was probably about as bad off as a city can get, an American city can get, you know, at that time. And so what happens from an environment like that is you get this music that just has a certain sense of like anger and isolation and just, you know, rage, I think is really more like it. And then that comes through a lot in a band like this. And then the other band that came out of that scene at the same time would be the Dead Boys.
That's right.
And we can talk a little bit later maybe about sort of compare and contrast those two. But what you hear in Paraboo is that sense of, you know, just kind of despair, I think.
You know, do? Right? Yeah. Urban alienation. I think you're right. And I think the other important piece about that background, Jim, that you so eloquently gave is that it allowed the guys in Pereubu to live in the city really cheaply. Like, well, they lived in this building called the Plaza. It was very cheap for artists to live, and they didn't have to really have these full-time jobs. I mean, they could actually live off of playing a once-a-week gig at the Pirates Cove or wherever down in the flats, right? And they didn't, you know, need to really have the straight job. So they were able to put a lot more time and focus into this music, which I think is really interesting, too. So you mentioned the Dead Boys. So two of the guys in the Dead Boys were in a band with three guys, I think, from Pereubu in Rocket from the Tombs, which was kind of the precursor band, but a lot more proto-punk sounding than Pereubu, for sure.
That's correct. And then when that band fell apart and these two new bands formed, they're really of sort of two different factions of punk / post-punk at that time. So Dead Boys went more in kind of a straight punk sound. And so if you think about this in sort of like New York terms, you know, the Dead Boys fall into more of like the Johnny Thunders, Ramones-ish kind of camp, and Pereubu's more on like the Television Talking Heads kind of side, right?
Exactly right. I think that's a perfect way to put it. There's a quote I found, Jim, from a writer named David Stubbs, and he wrote this in 2006, and he says, "The modern dance is a far more cerebral, imperishable proposition than a mere local cry of urban discontent. The Eraserhead-style sad clown persona of singer David Thomas, Tom Herman's nerve-shredding slide guitar, and Alan Ravenstein's abstract electronics combine to form a rock music as visceral and essential as the Stooges, yet which reaches parts of the brain untouched by their peers, predecessors, or successors. It's an album that's only gotten more awesome with age." Well written and well said. You know, there was a combination of David Thomas, who was an unusually strange, large, you know, he used to call himself Crocus Behemoth, right? And have this giant afro, you know, crazy mangled hair. And he just sang, and he did sometimes croak. Made all kinds of groans and strange sounds and pinned to a rock and roll bass with these very strange synthesizer. Sounded, you know, futuristic and kind of decaying and industrial. It wasn't like a regular way to play keyboards.
No, not at all. It was more trying to create sonic effects, really, than play like traditional sort of keyboard lines, right?
Exactly.
So why don't we just start with how the album opens?
Yeah.
Cumberland, you know. It's all because of you. It's all because of you.
It just sort of starts off with those sounds, but then like you don't quite know what you're going to get into, and then it just like takes off, man. Yeah. It's just like
amazing. Yeah. And the whole lyrical construct of, you know, saying I want to kind of go out with you exclusively, but casting it as a non-alignment pact. Right. I want you to sign this non-alignment. You won't align with anyone else. Like, that's the way I put it. You know, it's a brilliant lyric. The band, you know, when I listened to this record, it's been a little bit a while, but it's pretty carved into my gray matter. And the one band that I think they very, very directly influenced is Mission of Burma.
Yeah.
Right. And I think they had a big influence on how Mission of Burma used the tapes and kind of the background sounds to filter into some of their records. But you can pick out a million influences, you know, Periobu as you go.
Yeah. I mean, they're at the same time period as The Fall, right?
That's right.
And
mm-hmm.
I think you hear a lot of similarities,
yep,
with that band. You hear Television, I think,
certainly
get compared
mm-hmm.
to them a lot.
Yep.
And then I think for bands that came a little bit later, I think, you know, Sonic Youth.
Oh, absolutely.
Pavement.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
bands like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense to, especially when Sonic Youth did like Teenage Riot or something like that, in the
yeah.
sense of like they're doing all these weird sounds, but yet there's still some, you know, melody and pop sensibility
right.
to it, right?
Yeah,
and that's what I love
spine
about this.
There. Yeah,
yes.
That's exactly Periobu at its best has.
Right.
Yeah. And on this record, you know, the title track, The Modern Dance, certainly has that. You've got an all-out sort of scabrous, hopeless punk song called Life Stinks. Just an amazing song, actually written by the band's former guitarist, Peter Lovner, who had died, you know, before this album was recorded, of an overdose. Humor Me is a great song. And there's also some, you know, like Chinese Radiation, if you think about that song, it's very stretched out and kind
yep.
of desolate and unusual. And so the interesting thing about this record to me, Jim, is so Periobu put out their first single in December 1975, goes back that far, with mm-hmm. 30 Seconds Over Tokyo and Heart of Darkness. They put out a second record on David Thomas's label. Then they put out a song that's actually was remixed for this record, Street Waves.
I'm
The Modern Dance was also a single in August 77. So they remixed those two and they basically just took everything else they had. This is essentially their entire repertoire right. up to this point. And they, you know, if you read some stories, it was like, we thought we'd just put these songs out and kind of be done with it.
Right.
We didn't think anyone would listen. And, you know, almost immediately it was written up in Melody Maker in the UK. John Savage was an early supporter of the band. It, you know, John Peel started playing it. And, you know, the next thing they right. knew, they were like, all these people are actually, you know, in the UK, and some people in New York started responding, you know, and reacting to it. And apparently that's the story. This guy, Cliff Bernstein, was an A&R guy for Mercury Records, and he found one of the early Ubu singles in a shop in Chicago or something like that. And, just got in touch with the band and liked their music so much that he made a little offshoot label to put this record out. And that's the
How
way
bizarre.
It went. I know it is. Yeah, a very late 70s thing.
If David Thomas at any point ever thought like, oh, I'll just do this as a little lark and then that'll be it. I don't know where that went exactly, because he's still out there with a version of Perubu.
It's incredible. Right? Yeah.
And it's gone through many members over the right. years, with Thomas being the only constant. But
absolutely. And in many ways, like the Chills, there have been so many, you know, phases of Perubu, right. right? And people coming and going, even in the early days. And they've developed quite a cult following of people that, you know, they have a website called where it's like the Ubu Codex, and there's like the band rule. They made rules for the band and they treated it very differently. They really did think it was going to be kind of a future sound.
Is there a particular favorite song that you'd like to hear?
Humor Me would be the one I would really like to play. It's the last song on the record.
Another day was suffer. Oh, that's the way of the worst. Suffer.
Your favorite band, the Minutemen, took anything from this band?
A little bit, I would say so too. Yeah, you can hear some of their stuff without a doubt in the space and the way they kind of use
yeah.
time, right? And those unexpected hand claps that are coming in there. I mean, you know, what you read about Perubu is that they played throughout, you know, most of 1977 at a place called the Pirates Cove down near the river somewhere in Cleveland, and just the owner wasn't getting any people in on a certain night. He gave him a chance, and they moved up to Thursday nights, and they played every Thursday night, two sets for a year, and they would play these songs and then fill them out with a handful of 60s covers, and you mm-hmm. can hear a little bit of like the Seeds, Pushing Too Hard, mm-hmm. and some of the other covers they would do in Humor Me there. And I think the other thing that would be important for us to mention is the engineer on all these early records and most of the Perubu records was a guy called Ken Hammond, and his son later did a lot of the engineering for Perubu. They didn't really formally work with a producer. They, you know, they just kind of went in and sort of played live, and then they did a few embellishments, you know, here and there, and then the vocals would go on top. And that's the process they used for many, many years to get this. It was an uncluttered, simple, quick process.
Well, it's funny you say that, though, because I think this record in particular, it has an amazing sound.
Really does.
I think it really does.
Yeah. Apparently, they did the whole thing in a week. Recorded it,
I mean,
and mixed it.
To me, this doesn't sound lo-fi. I mean, it has a certain raggedness to it that gives it some charm, I mm-hmm. think. But it's that's more sort of the playing, I think. But the like actual production, the sound of it sounds really clear, you know, really.
Yeah, this guy was a longtime pro engineer who had engineered big hits. I think the song Green Tambourine was a song that he engineered, and I know he worked with the James Gang too, who were a big Cleveland, you know, Midwest band, and he engineered a lot of their stuff as well. So he knew exactly what he was doing with a rock band.
The other thing that's cool, I'll tell the listeners here, if you can, listen to this record on headphones, because they do a lot with separation.
Oh, it's amazing
too. So really guitar will be in one ear, and the keyboards will be in the other, and it makes it a better experience, I think.
And the keyboard sounds, you know, the synthesizers and all those things. Alan Ravenstein sounds particularly ghostly,
yes,
and like Nuclear Meltdown, like when you're listening to it. And the cover, which apparently was David Thomas's concept of, like, it looks just like a blue collar factory worker guy, but he's wearing ballet shoes and he's like kind of in front of this Cleveland, which I imagine is supposed to be the Cleveland skyline.
Is it supposed to be Marlon Brando?
It kind of has that look to him with the hat and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah. It looks like maybe he just came off a shift at the factory, but really wants to dance. So it's an unusual thing. Black and white. Amazing, amazing record. And they collected some of this stuff and has been put out in many different variations, but Fire Records in the UK is actually undertaking a Periubu reissue project right now where they're trying to reissue all the stuff. So they've done the early part, but this is obviously the first full album, the key document. The next one that came, Dub Housing, also a pretty amazing record. And then the next two or three were really great. And then there was a period where the band kind of broke up a little
bit. They did for a little while.
And then they started getting back together. And as you said, have been continuing ever since.
In one form or another.
Yeah. I once saw David Thomas do a solo set, and he opened for Richard Thompson at the old Bayou in Washington, D.C. It was really cool. Yeah. They actually made a record together, Richard Thompson and David Thomas. Yeah.
That's an interesting pairing.
It was weird. And I remember David Thomas, I don't remember a lot about it. I remember him talking to an egg at one point. He had like an egg in his hand, and he was having a dialogue with it. So that's the kind of stuff you would get.
All right. Well, I wonder if any of our listeners have seen Periubu or are really into this album or any of their other work. We'd love to hear about it. Call 612-440-1984. Leave a message. Get your voice on the show. Mm-hmm. I promise we're going to get stickers out to people who call in. I'm a little bit behind there, but I'm going to get caught up. So we'll do that.
Can we get a mailing intern?
That's going to be next.
Post office intern.
It's going to be next. You can also email us, rock@suburbspod.com. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @suburbspod. Visit suburbspod.com to listen to the show there or see track listings of songs that
every
we play on shows and go back into the archives. All that stuff is all there. And then please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Please.
That would be great. And you can listen to it so many places. We don't even have to get into all that.
No. Everywhere.
Everywhere. And every day. Yes, that too. We should mention that. Okay, so we're doing some important album anniversaries of 2018, or the first portion of 2018. Uh-huh. We didn't do records that came out after May. We're going to, because we'll get to that a little bit later. But anything like January through May on an anniversary that ends in like a 10 or a 5. there was much discussion back and forth on what qualifies.
Mm-hmm. And you had a fantastic list that you put together that really included a lot of different stuff.
You know, now that you mentioned that, I wonder if I should look at any, you know, yesterday and today we did a couple from 1978.
Yes.
Was there anything else from 78?
There was the
first portion of 78.
Yeah, there was some stuff. I'd have to go back into our extensive note system, meaning our text message
thread.
That's
what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I'm sure I can find it.
Okay,
here
we go. Do we
send each other all these messages?
So also, let's see, 1978, Kraftwerk, The Man Machine, came out in May of 78. The Buzzcocks, their first full-length album came out in March of 78. Mm-hmm. Big Star's Third came out in May of 78.
Wow.
Nick Lowe's Jesus of Cool came out in March of 78.
Incredible. Pretty
good
year.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. That was a good year for music. Yeah. And that's just the first few months.
I think Wire had a record that year too. There were some really, really good ones.
There's others I'm sure we're going to hit later on in this. Okay. But tomorrow we're gonna move ahead to 1988, right? We'll
focus on one album
from that year.
Right.
So we'll do that. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I am Patrick Foster.
And what should we play out with here, Patrick?
Why don't we play out with the title track, The Modern Dance?
Okay. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Down at the falls, man from Mandra, end of the town, man from Mandra, up for more. Can't get on plow, man from Mandra, 855, man from Mandra, down at the shore.
Cleveland, which has been in default since midnight Saturday, today learned something of the price it will pay. Sharply reduced city services in the wake of massive layoffs, with no indications its badly split municipal government can put together a rescue. Bob Fall reports.